This is the Get Booked Podcast, a weekly show for personalized reading recommendations. This is episode 81, and we are recording on May 16th. I'm Amanda Nelson, and I'm here with Jen Northington, and we are coming to you from Book Riot. Greetings.
Hello.
Welcome.
I'm going to do my Delilah After Dark voice.
Delilah.
My mother, this is like so random, but at least it's not weather. My mother used to listen to Delilah After Dark like only during the Christmas season because she likes the way that like Delilah makes the Christmas carols relevant to your family story.
I don't even know what this is.
You don't know Delilah After Dark?
No, I don't.
It's a radio show that has been on for like 30 years. I really feel like she's the Anne Martin of radio.
We're like, interesting.
It's a different person who just happens to have an identical voice for the last 3 years.
Right.
And it's like part advice column, part soothing, like easy listening music recommendations. It's just the most, I don't even know how to, please help me, listeners, okay. Explain Delilah After Dark to Jen, because it's after dark, but it's not, you know, skeevy.
It's not, it's like, quote unquote, after dark.
No, it's very Sleepless in Seattle, like that radio show that he calls into to find a wife.
Right.
Like that's Delilah After Dark, but with Christmas carols.
All right, well.
Anyway, that was random.
I guess we don't need to do what we're reading now instead of that.
Oh, no. I totally forgot about that.
No, I mean, I really, now I have to go like look this up. It's a thing.
We should do it.
Okay.
Okay, we've decided that instead of talking about the weather, we're going to tell you what we're currently reading because that was getting boring. So go, Jen, go.
Okay, so I am reading a couple of things right now, but the thing that's going to come up again later, so I will abbreviate now, is What Is Not Yours Is Not Yours by Helen Oyeyemi, which is her newest short story collection, which is like blowing my mind. It's so good. Ugh, she's just so good. Like I can't, like I lose words because she's so good. But I'll have more words later about that.
Okay. I just finished last night, staying up way later than I should have, The Prey of Gods by Nikki Drayden.
Oh, that book you keep talking about.
It's the weirdest thing I have maybe ever read. I don't know. It comes out June 13th from Harper Voyager, and it's a sci-fi fantasy novel set in South Africa where, like, demigods walk amongst us and feed on your fear or feed on your belief in order to have power. Very like Neil Gaiman, American God sort of thing in South Africa. Mm. But it's near future. I think it's set in like 2052 or something like that. So like AI robots, everybody has like an assistant robot and like it's a very automated tech sort of thing. And then the gods like start using the AI to like control people. There's people take hallucinogenic drugs that awaken the genes within them that make people like realize that they are also deep down inside demigods. And some of them are crabs and some of them are dolphins. And there's like weird crab dolphin sex. And it's just really super violent and strange. And it has the creepiest little girl on the cover. And it's just so good and page turnery and weird. And I can't even, it's just the weirdest. Anyway, y'all go check that out. It comes out June 13th. So if you are new to the show, like I said, this is a personalized reading recommendation show. So you can send us your email requests or drop your requests for recommendations in the form at the bottom of the show notes on the site. We will take any and all. If you need a request for yourself, for a gift, for your book club, doesn't matter. Just send them all in. If they are time sensitive, please note it in the subject line or in the first line of your post if you're using the form so that we can try to get to it on time. We might not answer you on the air. We might answer you via email or via a post on the site. If your question is too specific for me and Jen to really nail, then we'll take it to the contributors and create a post out of it. So just keep an eye on the site for that. And that's the show. So we're going to read our first question, do our first sponsor, and then dive right in. So go, Jen, go.
All right. Our first question is from Svati, who says, let's see. She has two recommendation requests. This is the time of the year that I gravitate to mysteries. I'd love for you to recommend a good mystery series that is not just about solving the mystery, but also about the evolution of characters and the relationships among them. Sort of a literary fiction plus mystery combo. For instance, I've just finished the latest in Louise Penny Inspector Gamache series, and I loved it. And the second request is for my next fiction read. I leave it to you. What book have you read recently that you would give to a friend and say, you have got to read this now? My recent reads have been Swing Time, Everything I Never Told You, and The Nightingale. Bonus points for diversity. Indeed. Okay. Before we get to those, we have our very first sponsor, which I am delighted to do the read for because I really enjoyed this book. It's Carry On by Rainbow Rowell, which is, I did not realize that this was true, but this is the first time that a Rainbow Rowell YA book is going to be in paperback, Which, like, I guess is true. Eleanor and Park has never come out in paperback, right? Fangirl has also not come out in paperback. But now you can get a paperback of Carry On. And let me tell you, the cover on this book. So they got Kevin Wada, who, if you know comics at all, you have maybe seen his work, to do the paperback cover. And it is bananas good. It's really delightful. You should look it up. It's also very purple, which is interesting. But I like it a lot. And Carry On, if you're not familiar. So in Fangirl, we got introduced to this Simon Snow character who's sort of a Harry Potter-esque. And the main character of Fangirl is Kath is writing fanfic about Simon Snow. Well, this is an actual Simon Snow book. It is what would be the last in the series. And Simon Snow is like a terrible chosen one. Like, he's not a good magician at all. And his girlfriend, who's like perfect and beautiful, has broken up with him, and his mentor kind of is avoiding him, and there's a magic eating monster running around. And in the meantime, Simon is just obsessed with his nemesis Baz, and like, where is Baz? And he hasn't shown up, and why hasn't he shown up? And like, all of it quickly devolves. Well, no, I'm not going to spoil it for you, but it's delightful. So if you are if you enjoy fan fiction, if you enjoyed Harry Potter, if you enjoy magic school stories, if you just love Rainbow Rowell, all of these things are good reasons to pick up Carry On. So, and plus that cover, it is lovely. So go check that out, and thank you so much for sponsoring the show. All right, will you do the first one? Will you give a mystery recommendation?
Sure. Okay, so we split this. I took the mystery, and Jen's going to hand sell you something awesome. So the mystery that I picked for you for Evolution of Characters is Cocaine Blues by Carrie Greenwood, which is the first book in the Phryne Fisher series, of which there are, I should really look these things up before I start recording. There's like a lot. There are 14, 17, 19, 20. There are 20 in this series. So you have lots of character development ahead of you. I love this so much. So Phryne Fisher is like a flapper in 1928 in Australia. She is the Honorable Miss Phryne Fisher. So she's through a series of deaths in her family because of World War I, like all the men in her family have died. So she has inherited a very distant relative's title and fortune. And so she was not raised that way. She was not raised in any sort of privilege in Australia, but now that's her life. She comes home to Australia. She's in London for the season, doing the wealthy lady thing. And then some friends of hers ask her to go back home to Australia and help save their daughter, who they think is being slowly poisoned by her husband for her money. So, like, when this woman dies, this husband will inherit all of her money. So Phryne goes home to Australia to figure out what's going on. While she's there, she gets embroiled in, like, this back alley abortionist thing that's happening, and, like, solves a rape. And, oh, trigger warning, there's sexual assault. And there's, what else? Like, of course, because of the name, as you can tell, there's like a cocaine smuggling ring. She takes up with some communists. She has like, it's just the greatest. And these two communist guys who like drive a taxi become her like gophers, like her kind of assistants or whatever. And then they stay with her for a while. If you've watched the show, it's very similar to the show, except the Jack Phryne relationship is not like that. So, like, the detective that she has a romantic involved with in the show is, like, 30 years older than her, is very happily married. That's not what's happening here. And the character in the book, Phryne, keeps, like, she sleeps around with no compunction, and it's awesome, and, like, her clothes are great. It's just a lot of fun. She's a really free-spirited, countercultural kind of character for that time period, and it's taking on a lot of very historically accurate issues that are, for some for reasons that I cannot explain, all of a sudden relevant again. So for a lot of reasons, I think this is a great pick, mostly for the communist cab drivers. So that's Cocaine Blues by Carrie Greenwood.
All right. I am going to recommend to you a book you probably heard of, but I have found a lot of people need an extra push to pick this up. I think maybe just because it's long, but I'm going to recommend Homegoing by Yaa Jessee to you, because you really do need to read it right now. Everybody needs to read it right now. The reason specifically for you, though, is you mentioned Evolution of Characters and relationships among them, and in addition to being one of the best debut novels I've read, maybe ever, it's definitely in the top five of debut novels that I have read. It is an epic, like, generational story. So you get a ton of different characters, and the way that she weaves them all together is, I thought, was exceptionally well done. Like, it's a lot of people, and you don't necessarily get to spend a lot of time with them, but she manages to encapsulate their character very well, so that when you hit the next character, like, you feel like you're taking a part of that with you, and it informs, you know, the next generations. And I mean, it's, you know, you've probably heard the plot. It is about the slave trade. It starts in, well, what is now Ghana? Yes? Yes. The Ivory Coast. excuse me, the Gold Coast. And it moves forward across the world, stays in Africa, and also splits off into America, and goes, like, maybe slightly into the future. Like, that last chapter is a little wiggliest in terms of when exactly it's taking place. And it's just, I mean, it's epic, and it's beautifully written, and the characters are really amazing. And it is also, I mean, it's a heartbreaking story for obvious reasons, but I think it was well worth it. And it ends on a really lovely note. So everybody should read it. You definitely should read it. I mean, you're a Zadie Smith and a Celeste Ng fan, so, like, for sure, you should read Yeah, Jessie. So that's Homegoing by Yeah, Jessie.
Co-signed.
It's so good.
It's just great. And it's not as long as I think, like...
Yeah.
It's regular, like 350. I don't know.
It's been very intimidating for people, though, yeah. I'm finding. Like, I think that's people hear, like,
multi-generational saga about slavery, and they're like, oh, God, I'm going to cry.
Oh, God. I mean, and you will. But, like, it moves along, I thought. Anyway. All right.
All right, question two is from Rye, who says, I have Memorial Day week off. Congratulations. I have just finished Lilac Girls by Martha Hall Kelly and was entranced. I don't normally read books based on true events, but would love some recommendations about other true events. It doesn't have to be World War II or even the concentration camps, just something page-turnery. The front of the book says The Nightingale, and I've already picked that up. I have Memorial Day week off, so I plan to be reading a lot, and also over the 4th of July week. Okay. I went back and forth on this one, because, like, page-turnery... historical fiction. Anyway, we don't need to get down into that.
It's tricksy.
It's a tricksy hobbit. But I went with The Book Thief by Marcus Zusak, which is also World War II historical fiction with a taste of fantasy. The difference between this and most World War II historical fiction that you will read is, well, it's YA, first of all, or was marketed as YA in the US. That's a point of contention. But it's told from the perspective of Death. Like, Death is the narrator of this book. And he's following a little girl named Lysel, who I think is 9 or 10 when the book opens. It opens at a train station where her brother has died, and that's where, like, Death is introduced to her. He watches her, like, through the funeral. She steals a book during the funeral, hence the title, The Book Thief. She goes on to steal books throughout this book, not to get, like, meta. She's a foster child, so she's taken in by a German family who raised her. They teach her to read, they teach her to write. The mother is, like, this really sharp tongue, kind of verbally abusive character. The father is very loving. She befriends a little blonde boy next door, etc. Then World War II breaks out. Her foster father is sent off to war, and a young Jewish man comes to their house, like a friend of the family, and hides in their basement. And so you're seeing it from the perspective of Death, who himself is dealing with, like, what his job is like now that World War II has started. And also the whole concept of the Holocaust and the war as told through the point of view of a little 10-year-old girl and a German family. So it's a different perspective. It is very sad. Like, there's a lot, I mean, like, any book about World War II is probably going to be cry-inducing, but one told from Death is just, like, extra, like, oh God, what is wrong with humanity? You know, like, you get down into those rabbit holes. But it's also page-turnery. Like, it's pretty thick. It's over 500 pages, but I went through it pretty fast. So I think that would be a good fit. So that's The Book Thief by Marcus Zusak.
I also have a World War II pick for you, even though you said it doesn't have to be. But that's what I got stuck on here.
That's what we know and you like, so.
I'm recommending a book to you that we sold a ton of at the bookstore when I was there. It is Sweet Francaise by Irene Nemirovsky. And this book is interesting both because it's a good book, but also the story of the author. So the book takes place in Paris right before the Nazis occupy it in 1940. And it tells, you know, the story of a bunch of different men and women and the ways that they're, like, dealing or not dealing with the occupation. And then it goes from the city into a provincial village. So it moves around a bit from people and places and has, like, a really cool multifaceted view of this. But what's also really interesting about this book is that, so Irene Nemirovsky was a woman, a very successful writer living in Paris, and she was Jewish. And in 1942, she was arrested and deported to Auschwitz. So she, and like the book, nobody realized she had written this book for like 60 some years. And then they found it and published it. So it's a very kind of like, you know, book in the cupboard that is based on, you know, actual experience that nobody knew about. And then it gets posthumously published. And I just think that's interesting and cool. Like, what a great thing to have, you know, discovered this book and to be able to bring it to the world. So that's Sweet Frances by Irene Nemirovsky, and Sandra Smith is the trans. Okay. Oh, this question. Okay. So this question is from Aaron. I'm really like, I was really entertained by this question. From Aaron, who says, in mid-July, my awesome bridal party, 4 bridesmaids and 2 bridesmen, including my sisters, are going on a bachelorette trip to Monterey. Most of these folks have been in a book club with me at some point, and I would like to do a one-time book club during the bachelorette weekend. Looking for something not too long, 300 pages max, possibly a good love story or about a happy marriage or something super funny, not anything depressing or brutal. So I just, no, Amanda, you talk for a minute.
Okay, what happened was,
yeah,
I don't read books about happy marriages. I have discovered because of this question that aren't just like legit straight up romance novels, which I was going to go with a straight up romance novel, but then I didn't know how weird that would be, like reading a bunch of sex with some bachelor. Anyway, so I took this to the contributors because I was like, I just don't have any idea. And so Kathleen Keenan, one of our actually newer contributors, recommended something that I thought would be really good. It's The Rosie Project by Graham Simsion. And this is a big, like very like blockbustery book that was super popular when it first came out. And it's about a professor of genetics named Don, who is somewhere on the spectrum. I don't know if they say it in the book exactly, like if he's got a diagnosis, but he doesn't really understand emotions. He doesn't think that he's really wired for romantic interactions. But then his neighbor tells him that he would make a wonderful husband. He doesn't understand why anyone would think that about him. But then he thinks that, you know, like based on statistics and the population of the planet, there's probably someone out there who would marry him. So he like puts together what he calls the Wife Project, which is an evidence-based like data collection project where he's going to go out and find himself, you know, a partner. And then Rosie, this girl Rosie, comes into his life, who is everything that goes against his list. She's a bartender. She's like a vegetarian, which he has a problem with. She's very unpredictable. She's always late. But she comes to him because she's looking for her biological father and needs like a DNA expert to help her. And that's what he does. And so as they go on, he like puts the Wife Project on the back burner, takes up the Father Project to help Rosie. And the two of them fall for each other. So it's, you know, feel good. Funny. So I think it would be a good, I don't know. You didn't say, I don't think you mentioned if you were going to do like a read aloud. No, you didn't say if you're going to be reading out loud or not, for this book club section of your bachelorette party. But if you do, it does have quite a few humorous bits. So good either way. So that's The Rosie Project by Graham Simsion.
So what happened with me was I was going to recommend The Storied Life of A.J. Fickrey until I remembered, like, yesterday that book starts out with a guy who is a widow and an alcoholic because he's so sad his wife died. And I was like, well, maybe that's not the right pick for this question. So instead, I give you The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams, which is so much fun. It's like less than 200 pages even. And if you are going to be imbibing during your bachelorette weekend, this is also an excellent book to read while under the influence. It's just so funny. Douglas Adams is amazing. You could also even make it a book-to-film book club. You could screen the movie as well if you felt so inclined, which is a delightful watching experience, I thought. They changed some details, but I thought they stuck really true to the spirit of the book. Anyway, it's The Hitchhiker's Guide. Like, what? You don't need me to recommend that any more than I've already have. However, I do want to just throw out, Amanda recommended mentioned Thinking About Romance, and there's a short story by Alyssa Cole. Maybe it's a novella. Anyway, it's super short, called Sweet to the Taste, that takes place at a wedding. Callie, who is her best, she is at her best friend's wedding, and she is making eyes at the hired singer, and they have a romantic interlude, and it's it's very steamy, super duper, super duper steamy. I don't know if that would fly with your like mixed company bridal party, but if it would be a delightful and very entertaining addition to your weekend. So that is Sweet to the Taste by Alyssa Cole.
That's amazing.
It's so good. There's like, I don't want to spoil it. Anyway, there's something interesting about the dude also, but I'm not going to say.
Okay. All right, question four is from Aaron. Aaron says, I am currently a Peace Corps volunteer serving in Vanuatu?
Vanuatu, I think.
Thank you. I have never heard of that place. That's amazing. Okay, so while I have lots of time to read, I also have limited access to the internet and the outside world in general. I'm afraid that while I've been here, I've missed out on new and exciting books, especially the quiet ones that don't get a huge publicity push. Could you recommend books from this year that are definitely worth the time? Internet download speeds here are slow, but that I probably overlooked now that I live on a small island in the South Pacific. I like almost everything, except right now I have a boycott on any Stranded on a Tropical Island plotline, as that hits a little too close to home. Okay, I went with Penance by Kanai Minato, which is translated by Philip Gabriel. It's so good. It's a mystery thriller set in Japan, and it's not really getting like the buzz that I think that it should. It came out in Japan in 2009, but it was just published here in April by Mulholland Books. So this is about four women, grown women, who are, you know, whatever, living their life. When they were children, they were best friends. And they had a new girl in town named Emily, who they befriended also. And then one day, Emily is taken away from them by a stranger and murdered, raped and murdered. And they discover her body. The four girls at the time witness, they don't witness the crime, but they see the man come up to Emily, take her away, they talk to him. So they're the only four people who see the person's face who did this thing, but none of them can remember, you know, they were like in elementary school when this happened. So they have a hard time remembering exactly what he looks like, describing him to the police, etc. And so he's never caught. And the statute of limitations, at the time the book was written, there was a statute of limitations on murder, which was like 15 years, I think. So the statute of limitations is coming up. And there, Emily's mother, in a fit of grief after the crime, told the girls that if they didn't remember the identity of the killer before the statute of limitations was up, then they would have to perform some sort of act of penance that she could accept, or she was going to like ruin their lives, basically. And so they have all grown up with that like on their shoulders, and this book is about the acts of penance that they do because they can't remember who the killer is because they were just children, and they've blocked it out. So it's a really disturbing, but just so engrossing and weird and creepy and so well written. I do not recommend it on audiobook if you're an audio listener. The narrator is like very chirpy and strange and cheerful for a book like this. So like I was not into that.
But this seems wrong.
I know. She gives them all like these really sing-songy like teenage girl stereotype voices where like all of their questions or all of their sentences end in question marks and like that sort of uptalk thing. It's just really obnoxious and strange. And not, why would you be cheerful about this? But the book is really creepy and strange and weird, and it didn't get nearly as much push as I thought that it should have. So that's Penance by Kanai Minato by Philip Gabriel.
All right, this is where I'm going to recommend What Is Not Yours Is Not Yours by Helen Oyeyemi. It got some buzz right before it came out, but then I felt like I didn't see anybody talking about it, which is it's so good. It's just a shame. And it's from in the last year. It's not from 2017, but it's from 2016, so it counts, I've decided. And it is stunning. Oh my gosh, every story in this book is a gem. There is, excuse me, she's doing her magical realism thing that she is so good at. And there is a bit of a through line in that every story features a key in some way. And some of the characters' names pop up unexpectedly in later stories. You're like, oh, that's a call out to that character from that other story. But they're completely separate. They take place in different places and different sort of kind of times. They're very surreal. And they're just beautiful. And what I love most about them is that they never quite go where you think they're gonna go. So like one story opens and it's a guy watching his best friend's fish, and you think like there's gonna be something weird about this fish. And then it's like, no, there's weird things about the doors in this apartment. Okay, so it's gonna be about the doors. And then it's like, no, it's about the fish watcher's like teenage daughter's obsession with the singer who's done a horrible thing and is not really apologizing for it. And it just like every story kind of mutates as you're reading it. And it's a really cool reading experience. They're just so good. I would love to see more people pick this up. And I think it would definitely be worth your time. I would love to be reading this like on a beach. Like that would be ideal. So hopefully you can make that happen for you. So this is What Is Not Yours Is Not Yours by Helen Oyeyemi.
Okay, before we move on, we're going to do our second sponsor, and that is the Spectacular Sisterhood of Superwomen, Awesome Female Characters from Comic Book History by Hope Nicholson. This is from Quirk Books, and it is out. It came out at the beginning of May. The tagline is, "A woman's place is saving the universe," which I just love.
That's good.
I know. So if you are kind of the persuasion or of the belief that comic books are don't feature strong female protagonists, that is not historically accurate. So in this book, The Spectacular Sisterhood of Superwomen, you will meet all of, like, some of the most fascinating characters from who have populated comic books from the very beginning, including some of your, you know, ones that you are perfectly aware of, Wonder Woman, Ms. Marvel, some maybe lesser known characters like Miss Fury and Gail Allen. The book includes vintage art and publication details and is really just like a decade by decade survey of industry trends, women's roles in comics, and spotlights on iconic female characters. So it's not, the point of the book is that not only do strong female characters belong in comic books, but they have in fact always been there, and it's not a new thing in the medium. So go check that out if you're into comics or history at all. So that's The Spectacular Sisterhood of Superwomen, Awesome Female Characters from Comic Book History by Hope Nicholson. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's you.
It is me. The next question is from Anna, who says, "I'm looking for essays that'll help open my eyes to the world. I'm taking literature next year in school, but I feel like I'm not ready for it yet, and reading essays may help me become more sensitive to words, etc. Please help." That's an interesting question, too. So, yeah, I was trying to think about essays that have amazing words in them, and I am going to recommend The Empathy Exams by Leslie Jamison, which is a very wide-ranging essay collection. She covers a lot of different things. The opening essay that the book takes its title from is about her experience as a medical actor. Like, this is a real thing where you go in to medical schools and you pretend to have certain diseases so that medical students can practice diagnosing you, and also they get rated on their bedside manner and like all of these other things. And so it becomes sort of this exercise in like, how does empathy work, and do these medical students show empathy for these people who are faking diseases, and what's it like to fake a disease, and how can you grade on empathy, and it twists and turns in interesting ways. And there's a bunch of other really interesting pieces in here too. Like, there's this one about one of those endurance, like, super ultra marathons that take place out in the desert amid all of the cacti, and there's no trail, and like, people, you know, injure themselves or get bitten by snakes, and it's like, why would you go do that? there's, you know, it's very feminist, it's very about women's experiences, but it's also just about, like, you know, reality TV and, like, all of these other, you know, present modern day concerns. And I think she is very good at words. I remember really enjoying her sentences when I read this book. So that's The Empathy Exams by Leslie Jamison.
Okay, I picked The Fire This Time, which is edited by Jasmine Ward and has just so many excellent contributors. Mm-hmm. Edwidge Dandekat is in it, and Claudia Rankine, and Isabel Wilkerson, Daniel Jose Older, Natasha Trethewey, just like so many excellent writers are in it. And so it's a jumping off point from James Baldwin's Examination of Race, which was called The Fire Next Time. And so obviously Jasmine Ward is working off that. So this is a collection of essays about race, specifically in America, in the current political climate. So there's, it covers just so many different aspects of like being Black in America. There's essays about like being Black and having to deal with stuff like Rachel Dolezal. And there's a really, I wish I could remember which contributor wrote it, but there's such an excellent essay about growing up Black in the South and the discovering Outkast, like the music of Outkast.
That one was so good.
Like, such a punch in the gut. Like, the idea that, like, the Black experience isn't limited to New York or LA, especially considering what was going on at hip-hop at the time. Then there was another one. Oh, Daniel Jose Older contributes an essay about his wife is Black, and then, like, they got married, I think, outside of the country. And then when they were coming back, it was during, there's so many. Like, one of the shootings of an unarmed, innocent Black kid who was killed by a cop, and like Daniel Jose Holder is contemplating, like, do I bring my wife and my potential kids back into this country where this kind of thing happens, and like, what do I say to her? And it's just like this heartbreaking thing. But there's so many different perspectives and so many different aspects of the Black experience that the essays address. Some of them are poems, so you're going to get a lot of different writing styles here, which for a student I think is really helpful. So yeah, so that's The Fire This Time, A New Generation Speaks About Race, edited by Jasmine Ward. Okay. Question six is from Elle. Elle says, my request. Happy lady adventure stories, please. I'm tired of love and crime. I'd like to spend some time with a woman protagonist who's excited about something else. Food, coding, travel, fashion, the Olympics, fiction and nonfiction. Welcome. 30 plus protagonists also. A few of I've enjoyed in the past. Radiance by Catherine Valente, A Tale for the Time Being by Ozeki, Serve It Forth by M.F.K. Fisher, The Custom of the Country by Edith Wharton. Thank you for any suggestions you can throw my way. Okay, I will go. I maybe ignored a little bit the happy part and went with just like lady adventure doing a thing that's not being in love or solving a crime. So I went with Lab Girl by Hope Charon. This is a memoir of a woman who is super excited about science. And oh my goodness, hold on. Sorry, my cat just jumped on my lap and got tangled up in my mic cord.
Oh no!
Okay, we're good. Okay, so Lab Girl, yes, is a memoir. Hope Charon studies trees and flowers and like the life cycles of trees. And so it's very much like a contemplative about nature and plants and like their life cycles and how they mimic humans and all of that. But mostly it's about her experience as a not from a wealthy background, trying to put herself through college, dealing with sexism in STEM basically. And then how she created this career out of nothing and how she ended up with her own lab, the struggles that she had to go through to constantly find money, to fund her laboratories when really what she wanted to be doing was like the science, but so much of her job now is about fundraising. There's a really great story, not story, but like a thread that runs through the whole thing about her and her best friend, whose name is Bill, I think. Bill or Bob? Bill, yes. Who is like her lab assistant, who she meets very early in her career, and then they like become just the best of friends. And it's one of the rare examples of like a really deeply important platonic friendship. And it's just, she does have like a personal romance. Like she does fall in love. She gets married. I think she has a kid, but it's so much not about that. Like it's so much about her career and her passion for science and the truth and data. And, also about a little bit about her mental illness. She has bipolar disorder, I think. And so, if you like audiobooks, you can listen to it on audio. She narrates it. And there are moments that are just heartbreaking where she, like as the narrator starts like crying, and it's just so affecting and lovely and hard and great, and I just loved it. So it is about this grand adventure of her life. It has many, many happy moments. I wouldn't call it necessarily a happy book, but woman goes off, lives her life, and does a thing that isn't just about like a dude. So yay. So that's Lab Girl by Hope Charon.
All right, I am giving you one of my comfort reads because I really wanted to give you like a 30 plus protagonist one, but all of them were about crime. Like apparently the only books with older women I've read are mysteries. I don't know how that happened. But you mentioned Loving Radiance by Catherine Valenti, and I have found that people, even if people are hip to her, they don't always pick up her kids' books, which is a mistake because they're delightful. Mm-hmm. Like if you just want something fun and enjoyable that also like is smart, you cannot go wrong. It's the first one is The Girl Who Circumnavigated Fairyland. And it is about a girl named September who is just like dying to go on an adventure. And the West Wind comes along and whisks her away into Fairyland. Of course, it's not that easy. She has to go through all kinds of like jump through some hoops. And then she immediately becomes sucked into this adventure where there is a terrible queen, of course, and she has to help save the kingdom. And there is a wiverary, which is the product of when a library and a wyvern have a baby, which is amazing. There's all kinds of snarky, funny, magical characters, and September is such a grump. Like, she's a really sullen child, and it's so entertaining to see her interacting with all of these different, you know, fairyland creatures. It does have, like, a sad beating heart to it, but it's also super delightful, and that's the nice balance of this book, is that it's very enjoyable, but it doesn't feel slight. It feels like it has a real weight that makes the delightful parts even better. So that's The Girl Who Circumnavigated Fairyland, woo, by Catherine Valenti. And all of them are really great. There's, like, five now. It's amazing. Okay, so our next question is from Am I Allowed to Ask This? Very entertaining. Who says, I am a super recent college grad who is semi-well-read, long-time avid reader of everything, and has been a lit major. My favorite way to pick books is to ask a bookseller their favorite book of all time or their current favorite read. So what are the books that you would hand sell currently if you could, or did hand sell a lot when you were booksellers? And let's see. I've listened to every episode of the podcast, so I know most of your very frequently recommended books. That's a nice be like, recommend something else there. Yeah. Okay.
We feel that.
Yeah, we hear you. We hear you. All right, Amanda.
Okay, so the book that I most frequently hand-sold when I was a bookseller was Shine, Shine, Shine by Lydia Netzer, but I've talked about it on the show several times before, so I assume you've already heard me say it since you just said that you had. So I'm going to talk about a new book that I have been, I guess, the equivalent of hand-selling now, making all of everybody I know read it and shoving it into their faces, and that is Done Dirt Cheap by Sarah Nicole Lemon. This is a contemporary YA novel that just came out in March, and it is so great. It is like Sons of Anarchy, Thelma and Louise, but with teenage girls. So Tourmaline and Virginia are the two main characters. Tourmaline is, they're 18, so they are young adults, like they've graduated from high school. Tourmaline is the daughter of the president of a biker gang in Roanoke, Virginia. And she is very uninvolved in the biker gang activities and really just wants to get out of Roanoke, wants to go off. She's going to college in the fall. She wants to be a kindergarten teacher. She wants to go have the life that is essentially the opposite of the life of a daughter of a biker gang president. Also, she's dealing with how at 15, she accidentally sent her mom to prison. Her mom OD'd on some heroin, and Tourmaline called the police. The police showed up, and eventually her mother ended up in jail. So she has a lot of guilt about that. Virginia is the other main character. When she was 15, her mother sold her to a local lawyer. Her mother had a DUI, didn't have money to pay the lawyer to get out of it, and instead gave the lawyer her daughter. And so he's obviously skeezy and is using her as kind of a low-level thug, drug dealer, gopher kind of a person. The lawyer gives Virginia the task of befriending Tourmaline and getting deep into this biker gang and finding out stuff about them that he can use. And so that's what happens. But then through a series of events, both girls realize that, like, the men in their lives do not have their best interests at heart, and they kind of have to take situations into their own hands and do some, like, really awesome badassery on motorcycles. So that's what they do. And it's just great. It's a really gritty look at female friendship in rural Virginia, which, I mean, the rural anywhere isn't really a setting that you get that gets very much representation in YA. And also, you know, they're working class people. Also a thing that I feel like is very underrepresented in YA. And their friendship is just really, it's just a lovely thing to read. So that's Done Dirt Cheap by Sarah Nicole Lemon.
I can vouch for Amanda's hand selling this. I think I've heard about it like 16 times now.
It's amazing.
I'm going to read it. I swear to God.
I managed to not talk about it for like 2 weeks and was very proud of
myself. I'm very proud of you. All right. I double checked and I have never recommended this book on the show because it's never going to be the book that I'm like, oh yes, this is the book that you're looking for, because it's such a weird book. But I did hand sell. I was amazed actually at how many people were willing to take a chance on it when I was a bookseller. It is Red or Dead by David Peace, and it is one of the last books in the world that I would have thought I would care about. It is a like 700 plus page book about the Liverpool Football Club and their like legendary coach Bill Shankly, who was the coach in the 70s. I don't know anything about, you know, European football. Like, I know zilch about this. I had never heard of Bill Shankly. I don't care. And yet somehow I read a 700-page experimentally written book about the Liverpool Football Club because David Peace is just that good. And one of the most interesting things, the best comp for the writing style I can think of is Hilary Mantel. So, like, if you read Wolf Hall or Bring Up the Bodies, like, that kind of style, it's like a little bit stream of consciousness, but David Peace is also super repetitive. Like, he will use the same words and sentences, like, over and over again. But somehow, like, through literary alchemy, this book is a gem. It's so good. It's so weird. It's just very, like, it sucks you in, and it and you find yourself, like, really just sort of entranced by the language and by the struggles of Bill Shankly to, like, turn his sort of scrappy, you know, football club into winners. And then why he retired. It was, like, a really big deal. He, like, very suddenly retired, and why. And Shankly is a very complex character. Like, this could be, like, a political narrative. Like, he offended people, and he was very arrogant, and he, you know, but he also had, like, people were very loyal to him, and just seeing his story unfold on this on the pages is... Somehow it's great. So I don't even know how to explain how great it is, but it's really weirdly great. So if you're ready to take on an experimental 700-page book about the Liverpool Football Club, try Red or Dead by David Peace. Just to say, I am not the only person who is obsessed with this. Preeti, my good friend and one of our Book Riot Comics contributors, has a tattoo, like a word phrase tattoo from this book. So it's not just me, I swear.
I didn't know that. That's amazing.
Yes, she does. She has a tattoo from Red or Dead. We got him to come to a Bookrageous party at BEA one year. And he, I think, was a little terrified of us. We were like, we fangirled at him, and he was like, who are these, like, you know, 30-something girl, American girls, yeah, who are obsessed with my book about the Liverpool Football Club? All right, I'll stop talking about this now.
That's so good.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, our last question is from Karen. Karen says, I'm hoping you can recommend some books to help me get my literary fiction mojo back. I've always read widely across genres, and until a couple of years ago, literary fiction was liberally sprinkled among sci-fi, fantasy, crime, and YA. Skip ahead to now, and with a baby, health issues, and a demanding job, I find myself increasingly reaching for books that have a low threshold for entry. Not bad or poorly written ones, but ones that don't require me to do the mental establishing work that is often required in literary fiction. So I suppose what I'm looking for is literary fiction with some characteristics and pleasures of genre fiction to help me get over the hurdle of the first page and rediscover interesting prose, engaging characters, and formal experimentation. Let's see. For reference, some of her faves are Margaret Atwood, A.S. Byatt, Kate Atkinson. I am conscious this is by no means a diverse list and would welcome an expanded perspective. P.S. No sad literary bros living their sad literary lives in Brooklyn.
That's real.
Okay, noted. All right, I will just keep going. So my pick for you is The Man with the Compound Eyes by Wu Ming Yi, and it's translated by Daryl Sterk. And this is just so weird. It's like, it's definitely literary fiction. But it has like a fantastical, magical realism thing happening. So if you're trying to get back into literary fiction, I think this is a good entry point because it's still got some of that fantastical stuff going on. So you're going back and forth between the island of Waiowaio, which is like somewhere in the Pacific off the coast of Taiwan, thousands of miles, where a group of indigenous people live, but they have had very little encounters with people from like outside of their island. Somebody has come to this island because one of the women like had a kid with him, but other than that, they don't have any encounters really with the outside world. And so you're following a boy who lives, he's 15, and in this society, every second son has to leave when they turn 15 and sacrifice themselves to the sea god. So they, like, essentially they have to die. They swim off out into the wild blue deep. And Atelier is this boy. He has to go and do that thing. He's a great swimmer and a very strong sailor. And so as he's swimming, he, you know, has kind of succumbed or like accepted the fact that this is how he's going to die. Instead of dying, he lands on a trash island. Like I'm sure you've heard about it. It's like been in the news before, that like giant plastic vortex that's like somewhere out in the Pacific. He like lands on it and sets up a home and like fishes off the coast of his trash island and discovers pens and like all this kind of stuff that he's doing. Meanwhile, you're following another character named Alice who lost her husband and her son in a climbing accident. They live in Taiwan, and she is like very quietly getting her life in order so that she can commit suicide. And because she just like feels like she has nothing left to live for. She lives in a house that her husband built her on the coast, and then her plan is interrupted when a tidal wave brings the trash island with this boy on it and destroys her home, and then she meets the boy, and then onward they go through the rest of the book, and I don't want to, you know, spoilers or whatever. So it's just very odd. Like, indigenous boy on trash island meets very depressed professor trying to solve the mystery of how her son and husband died. So, like, there's a lot going on. There's some supernatural characters. It's got a very low point of entry, like a small island with an indigenous culture that's not complicated, and then Alice, who lives in a house by herself. Like, so you're not having to world build or any of that sort of thing. I think it would just be a good re-entry point. So that's The Man with the Compound Eyes by Wu Mingyi.
Cosine. I also picked a book with some magical realism in it. It's very short, and the author is amazing, so if you like this one, you should read everything he's ever written. It is Exit West by Mohsen Hamid, which came out just this year, and is about two young people who live in an unnamed, Middle Eastern is the assumption, country that is on the brink of civil war. And Nadia is very independent, but also, like, you know, kind of working the system a little bit to her advantage. And then Saeed is, like, a very quiet, sort of gentle person. And they fall for each other and start having an affair as the city is crumbling around them. And then they, like, things get to the point where they're like, we have to go. And in this concept, doors, there are special doors. There are regular doors, and then there are special doors that will take you somewhere else. And you don't know where you're going to end up when you walk through the door. But they're like, well, we just can't stay here anymore. So, you know, they find the guy who runs the door and pay him all their money, and they walk through the door. And they try to make a new life where they land, and they don't end up staying in one place. I mean, it's a refugee story, right? Like, it's a very clear metaphor for the refugee experience. But what's so great about it is that it really focuses so much on their relationship and how that evolves and changes as they search for a place to be. But then there's also these great little vignettes of, like, them being in certain places temporarily and, like, what those places are like for them. So it's a little bit of, like, I don't want to say adventure story, but, like, a little bit, it's like the Odyssey in a way. Like, you're landing in all of these different places, and you're not going to stay for that long, but you get a feel for what's going on there. And then it's on to the next place and how your relationships with people change and grow and work and don't work and all of that stuff. So I just really, I loved this book. I thought it was beautifully written. I thought the metaphor was really well drawn. And he's just a great writer. I've loved everything I've read by him. So that's Exit West by Mohsen Hamid.
And that's our show.
Hooray!
Thank you so much for listening to my weird Delilah After Dark ramblings at the beginning. Please do leave us a review or a rating on iTunes. And thank you so much to our sponsors for sponsoring the show. We will talk to y'all next week.